I'm grateful to be here with you. So, good morning. This morning, I would like to talk with you about a case from the Blue Cliff Record that you have on your program there. If you have it right in front of you, or if you can look on with a neighbor, it is a very short teaching story from China, only three lines. This morning, I have a second quote on there that I'll attempt to work in at some point. I thought we might read it together as a way of starting today, because I really like the sound of Dharma expressed in many voices. It just feels really good to me when a whole bunch of people are in the same space saying the same words of Dharma. It just kind of goes into me in a different way. So, if you'll indulge me, let's just recite together the Blue Cliff record, koan, case number 27. A student of the way asked Yun Men, "How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall?" Yun Men said, "The body is exposed. The golden wind reveals itself." Thank you very much. So, for those of you who are new to the koanic tradition, a couple of words might help you understand what we're talking about today. In the Zen tradition, a koan, a short case, is said to be an expression of the enlightened mind. It's an expression of awareness. Right? It's a shout of awakening. These come to us primarily from China. In very early Zen, when Zen was becoming kind of distinguished as its own form of Buddhism, it had a complicated relationship with the early scripture. And I'm just saying complicated because I don't understand it. I don't know, because half those teachers seem like they were going, "Forget all that old..." Oh, but also I memorized all of it, so... You know, there's kind of an expression, you know all of it, but you don't really know what to do with it. You kind of take it seriously, and you sort of don't take other bits of it seriously, and blah, blah, blah. So the koan tradition arose and evolved over many generations of teachers and students before they started being recorded and written down. It's one of the uniquenesses of our tradition. Koans. The record of conversations between two human beings. And that's scripture, and I think that's fascinating. I just think that's fascinating that our tradition regards that as scriptural, essentially. You know, a couple of knuckleheads sitting down together and having a conversation. That's the activity of awakening. I think that's really, I don't know, I find that evocative, personally. These are regarded, generally speaking, more like poems. or songs, in that they're usually very sparse and usually open to many different ways of entry, many different ways of understanding, many different ways of interpreting. So your version of Blue Cliff Record Koan 27 will be different than mine. And yours is fine. Mine is fine. We're not winning here or losing. They have big spaces in them through which we can enter. Does that make sense? So, I think that's important because they feel very democratic in that way. Kind of like Rorschach tests, like, what do you see? You know, I see a butterfly, and someone else sees a scene from The Godfather, and you're both right. Because all it's showing you is your mind, that's you. You know where that butterfly is, right, sweetie? It's not on the paper. That's your mind. You know? So what we find in a koan is what we brought to the koan. That's what they're kind of designed to do. You know, it helps us see ourselves. Does that make sense? It's like, that's why it's alive. That's why it's a mirror. The thing that I'm also moved about is, not all of them are this way, but most of the koans record a conversation that happened between two beings, eye to eye, hand to hand, heart to heart, in a given moment of time. It's an interchange between two people. Some of them don't have two characters. Some of them aren't a conversation, but most of them are, like ours today is. The reason I think that's interesting is because this is supposed to be an expression of the awakened mind. And it's relational. It's happening in real time. With the light in two pairs of eyes and the beating of two hearts right now. Unscripted. Unrehearsed. Does that make sense? It's pssst. So as soon as I call it Zen, I've killed it. It's not that. They weren't sitting down, we're going to have a deep Zen conversation. 3, 2, 1, go. Right? That would suck. It wasn't. It's the meeting of one human heart to another human heart. And I think that's so important. At least it is to me. This is a relational tradition. And I'm talking about Sangha, but I'm also talking about Buddha, and I'm also talking about Dharma. It's always relational. Of course, the Rorschach test that I see is only my mind. I can kind of get that. That's easier for me to get to. What's harder for me to get to is the Aaron that I see, the Jim that I see, the Margie and the Matt that I see. That's my mind. That's not to say those things don't exist, but for me to claim to know some deep truth about the essence of Matt is really dangerous. Oh, I know what you need. You feel it? Like you're seeing your own mind, right? That's just it. All of Zen is essentially a Rorschach test. This is it. And so koans are just ways in which that comes out. And so is brush painting, and so is flute music, and so is kinhin, and so is zazen. It's why we face the wall. There's your Rorschach test. I mean, you're not going to see anything that ain't you. I see bunnies. Guess where they are? You know, so there's our tradition, and this is one of the ways that our tradition holds the word is, let's write down a story about two people having a conversation. What do you see here? Because you get a chance to see yourself. Wow. And that's beautiful because I walk away feeling closer to me. I walk away feeling closer to me. Oh, I learned something about me. So, anyway, I hope that's helpful to you. I said these are really democratic and they open themselves to lots of different interpretation. Which I believe is true. Thank you. So part of, because it's me who is talking about this today, and if you were talking about this case, you would be populating and infusing these words with different meanings than I do because, you know, we've got different histories. But part of how I populate these, especially when there's a interchange between a teacher and a student, or an interchange between two practitioners, even if one's not in a power-up, or if it's an interchange between two fellow travelers, generally speaking, it is helpful for me to imagine that those two people are very close. It helps me to think that they're very intimate already, because then whatever the conversation is that's supposed to be an expression of enlightenment is a heart and soul level conversation and not an intellectual one. Does that make sense? I mean, I can get ideas from you about Dharma from your head to my head and not even know your name. That's totally cool. That's totally cool. But especially these stories like this one where there's a teacher and a student, I like to imagine that that's a very intimate and a very close relationship and that they're having a really intimate conversation that's very unguarded. Does that make sense? That helps me to touch it. I'm not saying that's true. I don't know these people. And probably the projection you're seeing there in me is the expectation, the idea that I got really early in my Zen practice was, if it's day five of Rohatsu, and I'm, you know, three quarters the way through a week-long retreat, and there's a lot of turbulence in my heart or in my mind, and it is time for me to have Dokusan, you know, the formal meeting with my teacher upstairs, I know I've got about 10 minutes with this person. And I know him well, and he knows me well, and I trust him, and he trusts me. And so I'm going to bring him whatever hurts the most. Like, that's what I'm going to bring him. Right? I got an 8-day retreat to do, and I'm 5 days in, and this has stopped being fun. And so whatever it is I'm going to spend my 10 minutes on, it's not going to be some conceptual. Does that make sense? I'm experiencing suffering, and I need some sort of relationship with that that stops making it worse. I'm looking for alleviation. I'm looking for transformation. I'm looking for ventilation. I'm looking for sanctuary. I'm looking for refuge. You get it. When you're hurting, you bring somebody that you love that pain. You kind of offer to them. Is there something that you can, right? That's what I'm going to bring him. And I was instructed really, really early, oh, you've only got a few minutes, so bring whatever hurts worse. I mean, it makes sense, right? Because we could talk about the weather, and we could talk about what car to buy or what insurance to get, or whether or not the teaching of Anatta was really heavily influenced by the Chinese influence. It's like, yeah, that's great, and it's cool to have Dharma conversations like that later. But right now I can see that your cheeks are stained with tears, so don't ask me about that stuff. Show me what hurts. This conversation to me feels exactly like that. That's really how I enter this. This student is going to ask this teacher, a tremendously alive, very dynamic, and probably in this moment a tremendously painful question. How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall? How is it when the trees wither and the leaves fall? Please don't give me a conceptual answer. Everything's interconnected and there's no self, so all we all become... Nope, doesn't help me. I still hurt. When did you become spring? It's not happening now. Right now I see bare branches. How is it when the trees wither and the leaves fall? Do you feel the power of that question? That's the question. Am I right? I assume everybody's like, oh yeah, I know that question because I've asked it in a different way. I didn't do it in a nice metaphorical Chinese way. I asked it in more of a existential scream to the night sky, or I asked it however that showed up for you, that morbid poetry you wrote when you were 16, or you asked it when you were, it was behind everything you said when you were fighting with your husband. You know? What is this thing? It's going away, and I know that. And I know it. But I don't know how to in any way be at peace with it here. I just don't. How is it, teacher? How is it when this withers and falls? What is this? I mean, come on. This is the question. And what a beautiful question to ask. What a brave question. Jeez Louise. Isn't that cool, you guys? That's part of our tradition. Like, part of our tradition is people asking each other this question and then sitting with it and talking about it. Like, we're not wasting any time with anything else. We're going right to it. Isn't that cool? I think that is so cool. I absolutely love that. How did the universe come into being? Couldn't tell you, but here's what I can tell you. Hurts, don't it? What do you want to do with that? Something you want to do about that? Or do you want to keep running? I love the directness of this, right? He's facing his teacher eye to eye. That's how we do interview, right, in this tradition? Just the way we face the wall. He's facing the question, how is it? How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall? What do I do with it? How do I be in relationship with that thing that refuses any entry point? My brain can't get at it. I don't know how to get it with my heart. All my belief systems never quite crack it. What do I do with this thing? It seems completely impenetrable to me. And generally speaking, when there's a question that starts a koan, the question is basically impenetrable. The student is in some way stuck. They're in some way caught. They're in some way bound. Right? By the limits of their awareness, or the limits of their imagination, or the limits of their ability to hold their feeling, right? They're caught in some way. So they're doing what I was told to do. You bring your teacher whatever hurts most. Maybe you can help me see the way in which I'm stuck, and I can unstuck myself. Right? So that's our starting point today. I should just get up and leave right now and quit. That'd be the best ending. But I won't. I'll keep talking. How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall? So, a very deep question and a very beautiful question and a non-conceptual question. And so we have our answer, Yun Min. And the answer is usually called an answer. I actually like the word response. I like the word expression. I like the word offering a little better than I like the word answer, because in our language, the way we use language, English, a question creates tension and an answer resolves tension, generally speaking. Is that fair to say, I think, you know? Right? That's the way our language, the cadence of our language goes. Right? I will actually end on a tension note. Where's the bathroom? It is downstairs to the right. Ah. Tension, resolution. Problem, solution. Unknown, known. Right? Ah. Okay. So, of course, the answer here does not do that. He kind of goes, we're done. Go back to the Zendo. I'm not going to answer anything for you. I'm not going to take that away. I'm not going to take that away. Wouldn't it be terrible if you actually, think about this for a minute, if you actually brought your teacher your suffering and they took it away from you? How would that be? We think we want that, don't we? We really think we want that. If we stay with that long enough, we realize that would be horrible. I didn't grow at all. I didn't see anything at all. I have no more awareness than I did. I have no more compassion than I did. In fact, you took away my opportunity for compassion. That's too bad. Wisdom just left the room. I'm not a problem to be solved. If I show you my suffering and you see me as broken, that's your problem. That's a crack in your lens. Because I am not broken. I'm hurting, just like you are. Don't take this away from me. Don't you dare take this away from me. This is mine. It is telling me something incredibly important. It is arising right now in this heart, in this mind, in this body. It is alive. And it is telling me about something that I need to know. This is a holy messenger. I do not want this to be taken away from me. Even if I ask you to, don't take it away from me. Please don't. Help me instead. Understand, there is a way I can be with this that can change the world. There's a way I can get bigger in response to this. There's a way I can get stronger and know more and be wiser and be kinder in response to this suffering. It's the only suffering there is in all of the universe, and that's literally true. The one you can feel right now, show me another one. You can't. This abstract idea about later and others and how I went, no, right now it's showing up. How are you meeting it? It's that immediate. So the answer is not an answer because it doesn't take away the tension. It doesn't take away the issue. It doesn't resolve anything. Yun Min does what a great teacher does, which is just turn it slightly. Just turn it slightly. It's all you doing it. You're going to have to do all the lifting here. I'm just going to adjust your posture ever so slightly. So you discover you have in you the ability to deal with this, right? There's something fantastically powerful about that. We say, I'll peck from the inside, and you peck from the outside. They use the baby chick metaphor for Zen awakening. I'll peck from the inside, but my teacher has to peck from the outside. I'll peck from the inside, right? Because, you know, like if the egg cracks too soon, the baby chick dies, actually, because it doesn't have the strength. It hasn't developed any of that stuff yet, right? And without help from the outside, it never cracks. We need each other. It's relational. There have to be two hearts in that conversation, two sets of eyes, and yet we both need to be pecking. I think it's a cute metaphor, because the pecking part, right? When it's actually born and then it's all covered in the goo, that's harder for me. But if you fast forward like 3 hours and then it's like fluffy and yellow, I'm back to being on board. So I just want to show you the limitations of my practice. I'm working on it, you guys. Okay. Good grief, at some point I should talk about this. How is it when the tree withers and the leaves fall? Yun Min responds, the body is exposed. The golden wind reveals itself. The body is exposed. the golden wind reveals itself. So my confession to you, I'm just confessing because you're going to figure this out on your own. Otherwise, I would never confess. But I'm assuming you're going to spend your afternoon Googling this koan, because of course you are. And you're going to Google, you know, Blue Cliff Record, case number 27, and you're going to see one of two translations. And there are several different translations, but variations on two main ones. And the first translation answers, the body is exposed. And the second translation answers, the golden wind reveals itself. So all that shows you is the nature of the Chinese language and how much, what a large spectrum there is of interpretation in the way those kanji would be arranged and how that might show up. And I know nothing about that language. I am claiming to know zero. All I know is I saw both those two translations repeated on a number of occasions, and I sat with both of those answers, responses, and I went, they're both really important. We need them both. So the translation you're seeing on your little page today is me putting both of those together. They both express something that is a perfect response to this, and I think those two expressions that are possible translations of those characters complement one another really, really well. So I'm putting both in, although it's grammatically a little clumsy, because I think they're both really important. And the first is, the body is exposed. So as most of these stories go, they're speaking on the level of metaphor, but they're not talking about that. Because these guys are not talking about trees. You figured that out, right? Okay, nobody thought this was about, like, horticulture. Okay, they're not talking about trees, you guys. Like, oh. So this time of year, it's a good image for this time of year for those of us in Minnesota, because we see all the trees, of course, but they're exposed. Right? All the leaves would have fallen months ago, so we just see the branches. So he's using his students' metaphor, and he's meeting them there. The body's exposed. The body's exposed. Taken at face value, that's like a super unhelpful answer. Like, what happens after all the leaves fall off the tree? Oh, you can see the branches. Thank you, next. Is that the best you got for me? What a dumb question. The body's exposed. So the condition of this person, in my imagination, is that they are wrestling deeply with a very fundamental question about themselves and their life. Life in general, but their life in particular. How is it when all of this falls away? How is it when all of this falls away? And the first part of this response is, then you can see what's there. You can see it. It's right there. This time of year, for some people, is beautiful because you can see the strength of the tree. You can see the power of the branches. You can see the power of the trunk. There's nothing to distract you from it. It's not wearing anything. It's not covered in anything. You can just see the naked strength. Right? And especially in the middle of January or February now, where it's really cold, really, really cold, there's no idea about life right now. It's so hard to see for us. And yet what's actually left is this naked strength. So what I'm imagining in my heart is this person is showing his teacher his pain. And he probably imagines, like we all do, when I show you my pain, I am showing you my weakness. I'm showing you my vulnerability. And in a sense, that's true. But when we look at somebody through the lens of love, and they show us their pain, we only see strength. We only see courage. We only see their power. Does that make sense? You know, when somebody comes to you and they're just ripped apart by something, and they're like, ah, and you can feel it, and all you see is, oh my God, look at you right now. You're amazing right now. Do you know how strong you are right now? How brave you are right now? How courageous you are right now? I can see your strength. There's nothing hiding it. There's no persona. There's no games. There's no makeup. There's no mascara. And we're not playing any games here. This is just one human heart seeing the bravery of another human heart that insists on continuing to beat. In the face of the tree withering and the leaves falling. And here it is. And I see nothing but the strength of that, the beauty of that. It's immortal. It's unbreakable, right? It's right there exposed. I can see it. The body's exposed. That's amazing to me. Wow, there's power there. And then the second part, which is a wildly different answer, don't you think? If you think about those two things as different, you're like, how do those... I don't know how those how that language would be translated in two such wildly different ways. But it fascinates me because the second part of that is the wind is revealing itself in its interplay with the branches and in its interplay with the tree. Like, oh, you're a naked tree. All I see is the wind. Right? Which is very, very poetic and extremely cool. And the more I thought about it, the more I went, that doesn't actually make any sense because you can see the wind, you guys, way more easily when there are leaves on the tree than when there are no leaves on the tree. So what's going on? Does that make sense? I mean, yeah, you can see the wind in trees when there's no leaves, if it's really, really strong. But for the most part, I can't see what is seen and what is unseen. What is seen and what is unseen is what's being played with here, right? The golden wind reveals itself. The dance between that tree and the absolute, the relative and the absolute is showing itself. And the thing that I'm convinced strikes me about this koan that would have caused it to stick in my mind the very first time I was paging through this collection... You know, I page through this the way collections of koans the way you'd page through like a book of poetry and go, yeah, 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 yeah. Ooh. You know what I mean? One of them just shines. You go, oh, come on, man. Summer's Day, Mary Oliver. Oh, I'm going to put that one on repeat, right? It jumps off the page at you. And this one jumped at me. I'm convinced the reason it jumped at me is because of the addition of the word golden. I might be wrong. That's what it was for me. To me, without the word golden... That's a very different answer. And it's, in a sense, an unnecessary adjective. I mean, it's just an adjective. So it doesn't change anything about the teaching that's being offered or the understanding that's being offered or the expression that's being put out into the room in front of this hurting student. To me, the addition of the word golden changes it because there's an emotional valence there. Right? I mean, golden, come on, you guys. Everybody has the same response that where you kind of go, oh, yeah, it's soft and it's warm and it's of immeasurable value. It's gold. We wear it around our fingers and we put it up here and we all, I don't know why, we're weird animals. We've just decided we like that color. We've just decided we like that stuff. And so we've decided it's super more important than other stuff. And so we put it up and we do stuff with it. And then even as a word, it becomes a symbol of something valuable and precious. It becomes a symbol of something that is really valuable and very precious, gold. Right? Oh, how were you in that game? 40 points. I was golden. We know what that word means, right? It means something. It represents, wow, preciousness. The body is exposed. The wind reveals itself. That feels a little too clinical to me. The body is exposed. The golden wind. Now I have a sense about the state of Yunmen when he is seeing this person's pain. And I have a sense about the state of Yunmen's heart when he is relating the relative dimension of this person's experience to the absolute dimension of all things everywhere, non-separate from even him. It's golden. It's golden. The wind is revealing itself. This is the great motion, my friend. The great motion is for things to come into being and to go out of being, and it's a dance. And the great motion is for us to come into being as humans and to know that we're going to go out of being and to rail against that and to hurt as a response to that and to try to understand that and to create stories about that and to accept it and then to resist it and then to love it and then to hate it. Your relationship with impermanence is incredibly complicated. I hope you look at that sometime, right? Your relationship with impermanence, when you call up the idea of impermanence, the Buddhist idea of impermanence, and go, I love it when I'm halfway through a movie I hate. Whew, it'll be over in an hour. Impermanence is my friend. Ah. And when you're halfway through reading the best book you've ever read, impermanence is my enemy. Because I don't want it to end. Oh, look, she's 3 years old. She's adorable. Impermanence is horrible because Shun should be 13 and driving. Right? my Charlie horse, in 5 minutes I'll feel better. Come on, impermanence, come on, impermanence, right? It's just the dance. It's the great dance. The wind is golden. The wind is golden. This is part of the dance. The teacher gets to behold and has the great privilege of beholding the smallness of the constricted heart of this person who's sitting opposite them. He can see how you are caught. I can see how you are scared. I can see how you are grieving and resistant and avoidant. I can see how you are trying to hold the truth of your suffering at arm's length. I can see it. And I perceive it as beautiful because the body's exposed, because it's part of this. And it is not a problem. I don't hear anything in Yuen Men's response that makes me think, oh, you've got it wrong, whack. You've got it wrong. All I hear is this expression. I encourage you to see your exposure in a different way. I encourage you to see the wind in a different way. It's right here, showing up in your heart, streaming down your cheeks, aching in your back, racing in your head. I see it. There's no enemy here. This is the body being exposed. This is the wind being revealed, and it's all golden. This is Buddha. This is the activity of awakening. Right here, you're wrestling with life and death. That's the activity of Buddha. That's what bodhisattvas do. There you go. Right? This is what home looks like. It looks like this right now. It looks like you wanting it to be different. Mm-hmm. That's included. It's pretty brave to say yes to all of that. Pretty brave. So, I'm going to start wrapping up here. The second quote on your program today. is Sri Maharaj, and he writes, "Watch the influence of thoughts, feelings, and sensations on you. Be aware of them in operation. Watch their expressions in your thoughts, words, deeds, and gradually their grip on you will lessen. When the mind is quiet, we come to know ourselves as the pure witness." We become to know the body as the wind. We become able to know the suffering with compassion. We see that's the activity of awakening. To welcome everything that way is tremendously, tremendously challenging. It's a very, very, very high bar for us. And I want to remind all of you that in this tradition, when we talk about aspiration and we talk about vow and we talk about where we want to set the bar for our practice, please don't add the idea that we have success and failure. Please don't do that. In a few minutes, we're going to chant the Bodhisattva vows. Please don't relate to those in terms of success and failure. Our bar is high. Failure is also not possible. That's not the way we relate to those things. This is not a list of goals for the month that you get to tick off when you've accomplished them, right? This is about knowing the direction that our hearts are pointing and understanding why that is. It also is in no way letting yourself off the hook. We are always on, but we are both the person and the hook, so it's okay. There's no enemy there. There's no success. There's no fail. Okay? So, I encourage you, as I believe Yuen Men is encouraging his student, I encourage all of us, I encourage myself on a daily basis because I need it, to sit with this question, to sit with all questions in the same way, that they are tender offerings, that they are precious, that the suffering that arises in this human heart is of inestimable value, that the constriction and the fear and the hurt and the greed and the misunderstanding of this human heart is nothing but the activity of the Buddha, And when I encounter it as such, and I befriend it as such, and I transform it with compassion as such, that is the activity of the golden wind. And there is no weakness here. There is no failure here. It is just the bravery of being able to challenge myself to encounter all of it, including the exposed body, with acceptance and surrender and love. That's what it comes back to for me. So I encourage you to do the same. And I thank you for your attention. We still have a little time, and so I'm curious what your thoughts are today. Those of you who know this koan and have probably worked with it yourselves, those of you who have thoughts about this or stories that relate to this or anything you'd like to do to offer your voice to the room, please.
One thought. So I am new to this tradition of koan. And find myself having the initial response of, like, WTF. I'm not going to read this sentence again.
That's normal, by the way.
Okay, thank you. My initial thought was, the tree withers. The tree doesn't wither. Like, what on earth is he referring to, the tree withers? And then as we talked about it more, I realized, oh, he's defining the tree by the thing it produces.
Yeah.
And when the thing it produces withers and falls off, he's thinking the tree itself withered.
Yeah.
And his teacher is saying, the tree is still there. And you can see it more clearly because the thing it produces has been stripped off. What?
Gold star. Isn't that nice? I love it. It showed up that way for you. That's totally right. There you go. There you go. One of the other commentaries I read online was relative and absolute, and like the leaves go away every year, the tree only goes away once, and it will. I mean, it'll go away eventually. It's like it'll die. I mean, everything dies, and so it's already mulch. It just isn't mulch yet, but the leaves are mulch first, and so then the tree becomes mulch in, you know, 50 years or whatever, and we're talking about stages of. But whatever, doesn't matter. I like what you said because we so often define what we get from something as the thing. I like that. You're a pear tree, and when you stop giving me pears, you stop being useful to me. I like hanging out with you. You stop making me feel cool. I don't want this relationship no more. That shows up pretty much all the time, doesn't it? I love that. Thank you for that. Did you guys hear that okay? Okay, yeah, there's nobody there anymore. I'm still trying to get used to our new. Yeah, I love it. Any other offerings today? Jim.
As you were talking about gold and golden, I was thinking about gold as an element and how it's the least reactive element and the most conductive, so it conducts heat and electricity very, very well. And then in the second quote, it can... So I was thinking purity. And so then you get down to the second quote and pure witness comes up. And so then I was able to say the pure witness revealed itself is what I did. And and I think that's kind of what is being said here in the response, where when you're reduced, when you're, I shouldn't, reduced is not the word I'm really looking for, but when your pain is exposed, or when you are with it, the pure witness of that revealed itself.
Yeah.
I think it's,
yeah.
My expression.
Right on. Well, I'm totally following you. Yeah. Yeah. It's comforting to me to think that my exposed body would be met with gold wind. That actually makes me feel really good. I'm normally scared to reveal my body, my pain. I don't want my suffering to be exposed. And the promise of it being met by gold, being met by gold wind, that feels to me like, oh, I actually want that. I actually want that because that would actually heal the thing. Instead of it being a threat, it would then be benevolent. It would be So I love that. That makes a lot of sense to me, Jim. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, please.
Well, just to add to that, I just thought of the golden. That word is such a thing of value. You know, this limb that you think of as something that,
Oh, I like that. It's pretty hard to see wind as a friend at this time of year here, isn't it? If we were playing with the same coin in June, you know, or July, when it's like August and the breeze is like, oh, that's the thing that sets you free, we'd probably have a different... I love what you said, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a beauty there, isn't there? Thank you. Thank you, thank you.
I was just thinking, you know, it's like everybody can have a different interpretation of these sounds.
Sure.
But I just wondering, like, the idea of spontaneity is really important in our tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And so, ultimately, is that a wrong interpretation?
Mm. Oh, that's a good question. See what Ted says, because he's your guy. To me, the only wrong, really, I mean, I would think of a premeditated, very carefully considered answer as having a high potential for being right. I would also imagine that having a high potential for being wrong. To me, and actually the Rorschach thing that we made up at the beginning about that being kind of a metaphor, I actually kind of like that, because you can sort of see, oh, I know where in you this answer is coming from. I know what this is about. You know, and so maybe you've rehearsed that line 1,000 times, but it's just showing up right now as deeply authentic. So yeah, good answer. And sometimes the spontaneous thing is actually you just getting really triggered and reactive. Oh, it's spontaneous, but you punched me. So you get points for spontaneity, I guess. But I don't know that that's going to go. I mean, spontaneous is neither good nor bad in and of itself. It is neither desirable nor undesirable in and of itself. I think the reason, at least in my experience, that Zen has prized that so much is they think underneath the reactivity of the moment, like when I'm not triggered by the specifics of the circumstance, I can respond from a really authentic place immediately without having to, you know. So that's that sense of, I've always thought like, oh, spontaneous and Zen means this is deeply connected to who they are and it's ready to show up any time. They'll be immediately kind. They'll immediately respond with wisdom and compassion as opposed to, oh God, I gotta meet with that guy. I better be wise and compassionate in 5 minutes. That it's more of a natural, that we're actually less reactive, if that makes sense, and more naturally responsive. That's a great question, though, and it would be something worth... Yeah, I mean, you know, peck from the inside with Ted on that one and see if he...
Yeah.
See if he pecks from the outside. I will give it over to our Dawn, who is going to bring us home.